Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Well, we have you here. Has the president said anything about Swalwell? I don't know if he said anything. Has he been following that?
Why, has he had a bad week, Jesse? I haven't been watching.
He might be busy.
Has anything gone
with bigger matters of war and peace?
Couldn't have happened to a better person. But look, here's the most important thing. If we have 10 seconds on this, and I'm sure you would agree with this, the most important part about this story, and look, Swalwell is a scumbag. He is a terrible person, the worst of the worst, the lowest of the low, the most dishonest of the most dishonest. But the real story here is how the Democrat Party controls its members through blackmail. It's got a blackmail file on all of its politicians, and it uses them to leverage and control them until it's time to release it. That is how sick and twisted the Democrat Party is. That's the next thread we've got to pull out here, Jesse.
All right, it's a dangerous business.
Just tell when some people are shady, slimy people. It's harder in the media. Like, you can tell that in person real well, or at least I feel like I can. You pick up on things and you go, man, I just don't get a good feeling about that person. It's harder when you watch them through a screen. Yet, Eric Swalwell has always been one of those people that, at least for me, when I watched him speak, I would go, blech, this guy is disingenuous at best and probably much worse than that. Like, it's just a sleazeball. There are not a lot of people that you can pick up on that through TV. He's one of them. Adam Schiff is another one. Now, you can pick up on disingenuous people real fast, but they usually don't last very long in Congress, politics, media, whatever it may be. He's just been around for a while, and you kept going, how is this guy surviving? We all knew that you had hired a Chinese spy, but it always got spun into, and he was sleeping with her. And that's all we remember, when he was banging some Chinese girl who was his driver. But the point of it wasn't the affair. It was that he had hired and was very close with a Chinese spy. That's a big deal. And it just kind of, yeah, just kind of blows over. You let it go because Democrats rallied around him because they just wanted to keep his seat. Well, guess what? That's not the case anymore. In fact, that might be the grossest thing about this whole case. Now, before we move on to the politics of it, Eric Swalwell in general, I mean, just, I'm not alone, right? Everybody knows, like, this guy's just slimy and sleazy. Here's a clip of him talking, basically, Me Too, or I believe all women, just a year ago.
My Republican colleagues do not trust women. You don't trust women. Do you all ever talk to women? They deserve better. Trust women, my friends. Trust women. They will get it right.
You got to be full on snake oil to be possibly, and the allegation is, raping and drugging women, and then going in the media and saying that. I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy in politics and media. I understand that. But dude, how do you look yourself in the mirror? And I'm not just saying, how does Eric Swalwell do it? How, as a person could you live such a dual life? I just couldn't do it. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm just saying I like to be pretty transparent, because I feel like that if you're hiding things, man, it's just a hard life. It's a really hard life to hide things from people, especially that many things in that public of a position. I just don't get it. I don't know how you could do it. It would be so stressful. I couldn't do it. Watch someday. I'll have some sort of scandal. And be like, hey, you were doing it. Well, at least I'm not right now. I know that. Not that I know of. But I wanted to mention that because Eric Swalwell, this is not necessarily the biggest news of the week, but I'll give you my take on it. And that is that the reason this is so gross is not that Eric Swalwell is gross. It's that the party, the Democrat Party, is really gross. They've known that he's been doing this stuff for a long time, and they didn't care. They weren't going to do anything. They circled the wagons around him, protected him when he was banging a Chinese spy. They were like, no, 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 he's one of our guys. You don't touch our people. We don't really care what they do. He's ours. It's all power. But the power dynamic shifted. Did you notice? That's what brought him down. It's not his activity. It's the power dynamic. That's what shifted. He ran for California governor. And the trouble is, pardon me if you've already heard this, it'll be boring if you have. But if you haven't, you're like, oh, okay. So the California primary is called a jungle primary in that anybody can run. And the top two candidates, no matter what party they're from, end up on the general ballot. Well, they did that because they thought that it would always be two Democrats on the top of the ballot and they'd crowd out Republicans. That's why they did it. The problem is you have so many Democrats that are starting to run in these things and so few Republicans that the Republican vote share is actually at the top of the jungle primary right now. The two top vote getters are Republicans at 17% and 14%. And Eric Swalwell was one of about six or seven Democrats running that were splitting the ticket down the rest of it. So they got real nervous that in the general election, you were going to have two Republicans on the ballot and no Democrats. So they started looking at who can we pick off that's going to allow at least one Democrat to get into that top two slot so that it's a Republican versus a Democrat, if not two Democrats. So they thought, well, he's easy pickings. So they went after him. They exposed all this stuff about him. The machine came after him. The Democrat machine came after Swalwell because he was no longer useful to them. That's the most disgusting thing about this, and it's the least talked about aspect of this news story. Before we stop here, I want to talk about what I think is the other biggest story of the week, because we're not going to focus on these two things too much in this show. We got some scandals and some bigger stuff to talk about. You know, this kind of non-headline news, but I do want to hit those headlines. Iran, my goodness, at least at the moment that I'm speaking right now, Iran is this is going well. We're just now into the seventh week. So Trump said 4 to 6 weeks. We're barely outside of that 6 weeks now, as of like right now. And he is solving it. He has stopped the flow of money into that country. Who would have thought that they didn't care about their military? They don't care about their people. They don't really care about anything. In fact, they don't care about even the money, but they can't do anything without money. He's blockaded all of their oil exports. And it's so strange to watch, because you'd think if there's less oil coming out of one major Middle Eastern country, then the price of oil would go up. But the opposite has happened. The price of oil keeps dropping because they're all realizing, oh, they got a chokehold on them. This is going to end soon now. So it's weird because you're like, yay, but you're also like, the oil market is so speculative and it's all about futures, not present, that you go, well, this was kind of manufactured in the first place, wasn't it? Because the supply hadn't actually been affected that much yet. I mean, ships going through the strait, of course, is a problem. But if you cut off one entire country and you open the strait, the same is true. Like, you still have a lot less supply, and yet the price is dropping. That drives me a little bit crazy. We're going to take a quick break here. I am going to play a little bit of a promo for one of my books. It's called The Grocery List. You probably hear it if you listen to the Wiggins America very much. It's one of the items in the book. I encourage you to get that book, because I don't really talk about it that much. I wrote it a little over a year ago, and for whatever reason, I just don't talk about it. We're going to play that, and then we'll get to more of the news and the kind of underneath the headline news throughout the show here. This is Wiggins America.
Wiggins America.
America.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts. Let them do it
again. Yeah. Well, before we get too deep into the news, I guess we're already there. This is the second segment, right? We're already there. This is the first opportunity I've had to really talk about the Jimmy Failla show with you. If you weren't there, totally fine. If you were, you know that it was a lot of fun. Jimmy Failla is, I think, maybe the fastest comedian I've ever met. He is so quick, and I'm realizing the more I listen to him and the more I talk to him that he's got these like go-tos, but he's so like he's just on it in an incredible way. And if you listen to his show here every night on 97.1 from 6 to 7 weeknights, you'll know that. But he does his weekend show on Fox as well on Saturday nights. And so he never stops. I mean, he's doing 3 hours a day every weekday, of which we carry some of in the evenings. And then he's doing a TV show every Saturday and still doing live performances. He told me he was doing 40 a year. That's amazing. I mean, I don't think that dude sleeps. In fact, when he was here, we saw that he didn't sleep because he came in, did the show. And then after the show, I got to hang out with him a little bit along with Kim St. Ange and Mark Cox and Brad Range and my mom, which was a lot of fun. And Mark Reardon was there briefly. And I think that's it. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody from the station that was there. And we're just hanging out backstage, and he's totally cool with that. And I don't know that every artist is like that. I mean, I don't really push it, so it's not something I see a lot. But he was very like, yeah, everybody come on back. Everybody just hang out and just sat and talked with us. And that's pretty uncommon, I think, especially because I could tell he was really tired. He had flown in that day and was getting ready to fly back out at 3 a.m. that night and was still like, yeah, come hang out. And we're just hanging out and talking and having a drink here or there or whatever. And I was hitting the candy wall pretty hard, which is at the factory, which is super cool. And weird candy, too. Not just like, here's some M&Ms. It was like, here's some gummy-filled strawberries from some company you've never heard of. High class. High class. But Jimmy then was going to go, he's like, hey, I need to get something to eat. So he and Mark Cox went out and had some food. And I don't think the man slept. My assumption is by the time they got done, it was past midnight. And then right then, you know, 3 o'clock, you're going to go to the airport then. But anyway, all that to say, Jimmy Failla is legit, a super nice guy, remembers your name. I mean, that kind of stuff. Like, he's just good at it. And he's not only super talented and fast and funny, but he is a nice guy, and like to see that, really like to see that among people, because you never know what they're like off air. People get really good at being a certain performer type on air sometimes, and then they're different off air. And I've been in media for a pretty long time. I went from TV to radio to TV to now radio again. And so I've met a lot of people on and off. And in regular media, in Christian media, and I'll tell you, man, some people are just different when they're not on. And they're not necessarily all bad, but they are different. And some of them are bad. but not him. So anyway, just telling you that story.
Wow, Wiggins America.
And now to this story. The headline reads, "It would be catastrophic. A Supreme Court decision that could upend Alaska's Senate race." But ultimately, this article from Politico is talking about the Supreme Court case that was argued about a month ago. Oral arguments happened. They don't give the results of the decision, of course, right away. But you get hints of how it's going from the oral arguments. Well, this case is about accepting votes after Election Day. Now, when I say it, you just automatically go, well, why would you accept votes after Election Day? Well, I don't know the answer to that. I guess because they think, well, because it needs extra time. But of course, that's rife with fraud. And the reason that you don't want to do that is because then, let's say it's even a small race. I'm not even saying like presidential. Let's just take it down to really small race. Let's say for county controller or something like that, they know that they need four extra votes, you know, a really tight race. Well, then after the fact, they could manufacture four votes, and win the race. Like, that's a little bitty, tiny bit of fraud that could swing an entire race, even though it's a small one. But it's easy to do because then the votes are in and you can just kind of add as you need. That's the whole point. And you could do this on a big scale, too. It's harder to do the more votes you add, but it's inherently difficult to find. That's the problem with it. People go, well, give me the evidence. Well, the point is that it's difficult to find once it's done. Otherwise, people wouldn't do it. If it was easy to find, they just wouldn't do it because it would have been caught. So the point is, we stop it from ever happening. And this wouldn't stop it entirely, but it would make it much, much more difficult to do. And that's what a lot of these laws do. So the Supreme Court has argued this, and it sounds like they're going to limit Election Day to Election Day. Although any vote that comes in up to 2 months before Election Day would still be counted. It's just after Election Day, they say, no, that's it. That's done. You've had all this time. It's done. The laws say Election Day, not after the fact. So it sounds like they're going to rule in that way. But this article comes along from Politico, and I kid you not, the headline which I read is, it would be catastrophic, this Supreme Court decision. Well, why? I started reading. Why would it be so catastrophic if the Supreme Court said Election Day has to be the deadline for votes to be in? Well, because they find some little group of people, and they did this in Alaska, partially because Alaska, I'm not going to say it's a swing state, but it could swing blue in this election for Senate. So I guess in that sense, it's a little more important than usual. But they found this group of probably 100 to maybe 200 people that live in the Kodiak Island bush country of southwest Alaska. Mail arrives by plane. Mailing a ballot to the hub takes at least 2 days. And that's if the weather's good. And so you're talking about a people that live super remote from everything. And they're saying, well, these people might be affected. Well, of course they might be affected. I mean, let's say it is 100 people or 200, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. What you're saying is, if you're a Democrat and you're arguing in this political article, which you are, Lisa Kaczynski is arguing, that those people should have basically no accountability. So they have, what, a month? However long you have pre-voting, if you want to vote by mail. Now, you could go and vote at the precinct, too. It's not as if they don't have a voting precinct. They have one. But a lot of people choose to vote by mail because it's just more convenient. And that's everywhere, not just there. So you have to get your vote in the mail on time. That's the, quote, injustice that's happening to these people, is asking them, you know, you're well aware you live in a super remote area. Make sure you get your vote in time. That's the ask. And yet that is somehow, quote, catastrophic in the headline of the Supreme Court decision that is looming on this topic. And it speaks to a bigger issue that primarily Democrats politically, because I don't like to always just throw things into political parties, but in this case, it really is just Democrats and powerful Democrats that come up with, in the media or in politics themselves, come up with these narratives that find the most small group of people that they can find that are affected by something. And if they can expand that group, they will. But usually it's pretty small. And they say, these people are being marginalized. They're being affected by this law. And ultimately, most of the time, what they're saying is these people should not be accountable for their actions. For instance, and it applies all over the place. I'm just going to give you one example. These people over here are having a tough time working. They don't want to work, or they just want to pursue their dreams even. Like, it used to be, oh, they can't work. That's shifted now to they just don't want to, or they have some sort of block. They have trauma or something. Like just come up with anything. Well, they don't want to work. They could work. Their jobs might be limited by something that, you know, some issue that they have, but they could work. They just don't want to. Are you to tell them that they can't eat? What kind of monster are you that you would tell this person over here who has some past trauma and has a hard time working in the field or the office or whatever? How are you to tell them that they are a valueless person, that they are not worthy of eating? Well, that's the same argument as all these others, which is nobody should have any accountability for their actions. It's the vote argument is another one. Well, how do you expect, I kid you not, this was for a long time and you know it from listening to the station and others, how do you expect a black or brown person to get an ID to vote? They've backed off of that argument now, but they said that for a long time until somebody goes, that's super racist of you. And they go, oh, wait, I think that kind of is. We'll back off of that one. But they just try anything. And they expect to play on your emotions and find some sort of hard luck tale within that. And that's what they're trying here with this Supreme Court decision in Alaska. They're trying to find some group. And I mean, they had to dig hard to find how this would affect somebody. Well, that's what they're going to go with. I bet you hear that talking point a lot more about rural voters. Maybe not just Alaska, but they'll talk about rural voters and how, oh my gosh, this is going to affect them. You take away PBS, what are rural people going to watch? They don't even have phones or TV. Like, you're complete idiots. It's amazing. Anyway, I've gone long. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Consider this a scandal segment. I was going to lead with one major scandal that is breaking against the Biden administration. Really, it's more like the deep state under the Biden administration during his term. But there are so many scandals breaking right now that I have listed of all of them right here. And we're just going to blow through them. They're all breaking at the same time. And some are a bigger deal than others, but they're all scandals. And honestly, you're probably not going to hear about almost any of them because the news is just so fast and these things get so little attention that we're just going to pack them all together here. Okay, the first one, Margot Cleveland from The Federalist. She's a great investigative journalist. She was on the Annie Fry show this week. I think it was Wednesday. And I didn't know what that interview was going to be. Brad and Annie had booked that, and I was just sitting there basically listening to it. And what she said was that she, through Freedom of Information Act and just, you know, doing journalism, doing investigations, found that in 2018, I'm summarizing here because she goes into deep. In 2018, the Biden DOJ / deep state organizations, whoever they are, found and faked a whistleblower to start the investigation that led to the impeachment of Donald Trump. So that whole impeachment was based on a fabrication, now we're finding, that whoever it was, these deep state DOJ actors, whoever they were, they plucked a whistleblower, which I think was Alexander Vindman. I'd have to look back and see if it was actually him. You remember that name. And I think his brother is actually in Congress now. They're super hard left guys. And they plucked this guy and they said, here's information. We're going to make you into a whistleblower so that we can then say, oh, we have a whistleblower. Now we're going to open an investigation. So they had information that they thought was not good enough to open an investigation on their own, but fed it to a fake whistleblower who then they said, oh, now we can open up something based on the whistleblower that they created. That's a scandal. And that is true. That is provably true that that happened. And then it led to Congress getting involved and then the Democrats running with it. And the impeachment in 2019 of Donald Trump is where it eventually led. So you're talking about something that's completely fabricated. And now, and that was all reported on the Annie Fry Show. Like, she broke that story. Not Annie, but Annie with Margot Cleveland. And now the Department of National Intelligence head, Tulsi Gabbard, is getting involved based on that, I think, because it says DNI Tulsi Gabbard has sent criminal referrals to the Justice Department related to a former intelligence community inspector general and a quote-unquote lit whistleblower whose complaint helped trigger the first impeachment of President Donald Trump. This is becoming actual news now. So this is just from Friday. That interview we did was Wednesday. The whistleblower complaint, deemed credible at the time by then-Inspector General Michael Atkinson, set off a chain of events that culminated in Trump's impeachment in 2019 for pressuring Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to investigate his then-political rival Joe Biden. The Senate then later acquitted Trump in a largely party-line vote. Of course, he was impeached but not removed from office, as you know. The new criminal referral was first reported by Fox News. A spokesperson for Gabbard's office confirmed to MS Now that she had sent a criminal referral to the Justice Department but declined to provide further details. By the way, this article is from MS Now, far left. It says DNI Gabbard targets whistleblower. That's the headline. What do you think that's meant to do to your emotions and your information? So there you go. That's that. That's one scandal that's breaking right now. Here's the next one. DOJ report confirms the Biden administration teamed up with Planned Parenthood to track pro-lifers so it could seek harsher prison sentences against them. I'm not going to go into this article super deeply. You probably know what you need to know based on what I just read to you, but just really quick, unless you're now just tuning in, the article says, you probably knew that the Biden Justice Department was weaponizing the FACE Act, a 1994 law sponsored by Chuck Schumer to go after peaceful protesters. By the way, the FACE Act, which was passed by Congress in 1994, was meant to protect worshipers. It's specifically meant to protect churches and worship organizations. But the Biden administration turned it into something, weaponized it against pro-lifers themselves. And then this is the same law that they were trying to get Don Lemon and all of those crazy protesters that that marched into that church during service a few months ago on. It doesn't look like they're going to be able to get Don Lemon. I think they'll get a bunch of those other people, though. It's all based on that FACE Act. So that's another scandal. And then we turn our attention to another kind of big one here. There is an investigation ongoing now of Fannie Willis's $2 million grant from the Biden administration. Why? Well, because what it looks like is that Fannie Willis was given a no-bid grant, as in the government's supposed to bid these things out. Like, oh, you're going to do this. We're going to have multiple people apply for it. We'll choose the best one. They were told, the Fannie Willis team was told ahead of time about this $2 million grant, and no other bids were applied for it just before Fannie Willis went after Donald Trump in the, quote, fake electors scheme. The article says that it lays bare Democrats' coordination of Trump's prosecutors in Atlanta. New documents disclose that the prosecutor was invited, quote, invited, to apply for a grant that was bereft of any other applicants. So basically what it looks like is that the Biden administration said strongly, we have nothing to do with that case. That's in Georgia. That's Fannie Willis. They're doing their own investigation. So that was a lie. Now, not only was it a lie that they were involved, it looks like they paid off Fannie Willis's team to do it. I mean, it gets deep. That's some pretty bad stuff. And if there was no other applicants for that quote unquote government grant of $2 million. And by the way, I can't even find what the $2 million was for. Like, this obviously was some made up grant for something, but I can't even figure out what the grant was pretending to be. So it's just a buy off. And that looks like another criminal possibility there. Fannie Willis is already in a lot of legal trouble for using her office inappropriately in many, many different ways. Add that to the list. Don't you just want justice? I mean, don't you want something to happen with these things? Oh, hang on, though. That's not the last one. Like I said, this is a lot of scandals, and they're all breaking simultaneously. RFK Jr. announces the reversal of Biden-era foster care rule that discriminated against Christians. So the Biden team in the HHS had made up a rule that Christians would be considered almost like second class when it came to foster care. Do you know a lot of people that do foster care who aren't Christians? Maybe I'm just in a bubble, but every single person I know who participates in foster care very lovingly, that's a very difficult thing to do. You have to have a big heart to be a foster parent. Every single person I know who does it, and there's a lot actually in our church, are all Christians. And outside of my church, the people I know, all Christians. So they made a rule internally that they would discriminate against Christians in foster care. It goes like this. The article from Not the Bee says, "We're making foster care great again, everyone. If you remember, Biden excluded Christian families who disagreed with the LGBTQ agenda from caring for children in need." It says, quote, "The Biden administration was excluding an entire class of people because of their religious beliefs and told the states to actually pass laws refusing families who had certain religious beliefs, mainly against the LGBTQ agenda, mainly Christian religious beliefs, of course, not to be allowed to have children. That dramatically restricted the pool of available parents. And we are changing that," said RFK. So good news there. Glad to see a lot of this stuff being reversed, but still, wow, lots of scandals. We're going to take a short break and be right back. This is Wiggins America.
Between the silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea, there lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there.
Wiggins America.
But in the gray of the morning, my mind.
Earlier this week on the Annie Fry Show, Ryan Recker was filling in for Annie, who was on vacation for a couple days, and he brought a story that was a local story that I had not heard. As you've probably figured out if you listen to Wiggins America or Annie Fry Show, or actually most of our shows, we talk about national issues and big social, political movements and stuff like that, and the news, the big headline news of the day, a little bit more than we talk about local. Although, I will say Mark and Mark hit local politics more than I do or Annie does. We talk a little bit more about Illinois than they do, but generally we're talking about kind of big stuff. And so when a local story comes like this, I sometimes miss it. But here's the headline. Cars in St. Louis vandalized with swastikas. So somebody was going around, and I guess with five different cars, keying swastikas into the car. And we talked about that a little bit, but it got me thinking, and I never told this story. We kind of ran out of time when we were talking about it. But I've had vandalism on my car before, too. And doesn't it make you mad? I mean, it makes my blood boil when somebody unjustly does something to me. Now, if there's a reason for them to do something to me that I've screwed up and they're maybe they're not being kind, but they do it to me, I can kind of absorb that a little bit better. I might be mad about it, but I can absorb it if there's some sort of reason. But if it is mindless, just theft, for instance, if you've ever been stolen from, I mean, I've had little thefts here and there, and I've been swindled before, like scammed by companies, you know, pay a company to do something and they just don't do it. You know, that makes me really mad. But the problem is they know how to do it so well. Not to get off on a tangent, but if a company swindles you out of, say, $500 or maybe even $1,000, they know that you're not really going to do anything about it. You can complain to the Better Business Bureau or something like that, but they know that you can't really get it back because doing a lawsuit against them is more expensive than getting the $500. So that's why they dabble in that area, and they don't go for the big kill at any time. They just get you little things like that. I've been swindled a couple times like that. And man, it just makes me so mad. Like, I just want pure vengeance. But even vandalism will do that. If you've ever been stolen from, like, I would like to hear your story, actually, because I know that when you get stolen from, you're like, please, somebody listen to me. I need justice. and you want to reach out to law enforcement and media and be like, listen to this. And so I'm kind of opening myself up right now and saying, let me hear it. If you're still mad about it, like, let me know, because I'm in that spot right now. And I tell you what, if I weren't in media, I would be contacting media and saying, listen to this. So let me know at Radio Wiggins if you want to just share, you know, just if you want to get it off your chest. I'll do what I can. I don't know if I can do anything, but at least you can talk to somebody about it and maybe I can broadcast it. We'll see. But this one was weird. And coming off of the swastikas carved in the car story, I had somebody vandalize my car once in the parking lot here at Odyssey. It was in the parking garage. There's a spot that we park in a lot that is next to a handicap spot, but it itself is not a handicap spot. And it looks a little confusing, so I'll give them that. That if you park in the handicap spot, you can't quite see that this other one is just a regular spot very well. You should be able to. I mean, it's on you, but and everybody else is seeing it, but it is a little bit hard to see. And so it's a spot that I park in, not every day, but a lot of times it's open when I get here, and so I park there. And I guess the person next to it who parks in the handicap spot, or regularly does, thought that me and other people who were parking in that spot were just using up a handicap spot, which we were not. And they took it on themselves to have vigilante justice, and I guess bought some stickers or had some stickers made that were these super hard to remove things that talk about the injustice of parking in a handicapped spot if you're not handicapped and what it does to handicapped people. And bam, like the size of my full palm, slapped that thing on my driver's side window. And we didn't know who it was at first, of course, because I just came out and all of a sudden I got this giant sticker on my window. And I start trying to take it off. It ain't coming off. And man, was I mad. And I mean, like, blood boil. I'm going to get whoever did this because this is wrong. I was fine. That parking spot is fine. And they were wrong. And all that's true. And so I started asking around. I'm like, the company, let's look at security footage. I did all this. And we didn't find them doing it, but we saw who it probably was and had enough evidence to really throw the book at them if we wanted to. But it's like at that point, what do? Do you just confront them? Do you sue them? Do you make them clean the thing off of your car? Because they're definitely in the wrong, and you can prove it. And so I'm like, we're going all the way here. This person is going to come out and personally get this sticker off of my car because it is so wrong that they're making me even have to think about this stupid thing when they're wrong. And in the process of this, I just felt, and I guess I'd say the Holy Spirit saying, let it go. And I was like, no, we've got them. We've got them. We've got the security footage. We know who it is. And I still felt, let it go. So I did. I let it go. I don't know if the person ever was told that they had security footage. Like, I don't know really. At the time, I could tell you. I don't remember. This was like over a year ago. So I don't know if that person ever even found out that they were in the wrong. I really hope that they did. But the minute I was told to let it go, by God, I did. And I don't know. I just felt like that was what I was supposed to do. And so I did. And maybe that's a bigger lesson in all the things that we talk about here. It's really hard to forgive, like, if the government is throwing away your tax money. You know, like, how do you forgive for that? I guess emotionally you can, but it's much easier in a situation with a person. I say easy. It's not easy, but I think it's more tangible to be able to forgive a person personally than to forgive like a social movement, you know? Like, I don't really know how to even describe that. I try to live that way, but it's different for everybody. And there are times that I think you are supposed to pursue justice, like all the way. But in that moment, I just didn't feel it. Anyway, we're going to end there because we're out of time. This is Wiggins America. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you next time.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.